You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio, 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Barbara Fuqua.
And I'm Scott Weddle. This is the Daily Local News for Wednesday, May 24, 2017.
There's a wide range of affordability needs because talking about affordable housing can refer to a wide range of incomes.
The director of a local affordable housing organization talks about what counts as truly affordable. That's later in the show in today's WFHB Community Report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, we hear about the fallout from a hack of the National Security Administration on a new edition of our Consumer Watchdog segment, Better Beware. But first, your daily headlines.
The city of Bloomington is challenging the constitutionality of legislation passed by the Indiana General Assembly last month that stopped the city's annexation effort. Annexation was halted thanks to a provision added to the state's budget bill at the last minute. In a press release today, Mayor John Hamilton said the state's move is, quote, a gross overreach, end quote, and undermines the concept of home rule. Hamilton went on to state that, quote, without a court's ruling in our favor, every local government in Indiana could have legal processes capriciously terminated by state-level officials. City Attorney Philippa Guthrie says the lawsuit is based on two sections of the Indiana Constitution.
One of them is Article 4, Section 23, which is a prohibition against unconstitutional special legislation, which in simple terms would be legislation that targets, that is not generally applicable, is targeting a very, very small group. The other is Article 4, Section 19, and that is a requirement that legislation be confined to one subject. So, for example, here the legislation was the budget, and pretty much everything in there can be tied to the budget, but not Section 161, which is the portion that we are challenging, which really has nothing to do with the budget.
City attorneys Michael Roker and Thomas Cameron are handling the lawsuits for the city. Guthrie says she can't predict how long it might take for the suit to work its way through the courts.
I mean, there are just a lot of variables, including how long it takes at the trial level, what the state's response will be. There, you know, is likely to be discovery. Depends on whether you file certain kinds of motions or not, and then whether it goes up on appeal. And it could either go to appellate level or Supreme Court level, state Supreme Court, depending on the course of the case. So could be months to, you know, more than a year.
Mayor Hamilton has said the city was diligent in its annexation process following the letter of the law. However, with regard to the budget provision that stopped the process, the city maintains no Bloomington officials were notified prior to its publication. The legislature held no hearings and did not gather public testimony. The city spent more than $770,000 attempting to annex about 10,000 acres of Monroe County before it was forced to stop.
The Monroe County Redevelopment Commission last week approved contracting with engineering firm DLZ for a preliminary design to extend Profile Parkway. In the commission's May 17th meeting, Public Works Director Lisa Ridge said that $471,000 contract costs $30,000 less than she expected.
For the public, the scope of services would include sidewalk design and construction along each side of both Profile Parkway and the new road heading north and south, enclosed storm sewer design and drainage detention design, traffic signal design at Curry Pike, stop-controlled intersection designs at Gates and Jonathan. If required, a passing blister will be designed at Jonathan Drive, signing and pavement marking plans. The total length of the two roads is 0.64 miles. The typical section of both roads will consist of two 18-foot lanes utilizing asphalt pavement with standard concrete curb and gutter and a 5-foot concrete sidewalk on both sides.
Ridge added that ADA-accessible curb ramps will be installed in all street crossings. Construction on the Profile Parkway extension is expected to begin in the fall of 2018. Although the Redevelopment Commission is paying for the project, Ridge said that she would like to submit it for a community crossings grant through the Indiana Department of Transportation.
If your project qualifies and you meet the right criteria, which looking at this project meets their requirements, then we could do a 50-50 match up to $1 million.
Ridge said last year the county received more than $800,000 in community crossings grant money for other projects. The commission gave Ridge the okay to apply for the grant.
The town of Ellettsville is increasing its stormwater fees to help pay for projects that could eventually address the town's flooding problems. In a meeting Monday night, council members voted to increase stormwater fees by approximately $1 per month for an average household. Councilmember Brian Mobley says town officials are hoping to work with the Department of Natural Resources on projects to reduce flooding.
Right now, our stormwater is low. We don't have enough capital to start these projects. And we have about three projects we'd like to start with it, and then that would help reduce the flooding in downtown. It's not a whole lot of money. What it generates is about $41,000 a year. So, you know, it would take some process, it'll take some time to get surveys, things like that, before we could even dig in the dirt.
Flooding has been a major problem in downtown Ellettsville as recently as last month. The cost of the new fee will be based on the amount of impervious surface on a given property. Properties with larger areas of pavement or other impervious surfaces will be charged more than the average of $1 a month. Councilmember Scott Thomas says the proposed stormwater fee increase is needed for the town to plan for the future.
As we go forward and more roofs are put up and more asphalt put down, unless we are planning for the future and having funds to remedy the flooding, I see us running into problems if we're not prepared for it to be able to do some projects to prevent that.
Council members Thomas, Mobley, and Kevin Ferris approved the fee increase. Council President Scott Oldham was absent.
Last Thursday, IU students Hayden Mills and Deept Chaudhry were announced as the first prize winners of Bloomington's Civic Code Challenge, according to a press release by the City of Bloomington. The prize for first place was $500. David Whitwer and Abraham Kim took second place, winning $350, and Zan Haralovich was awarded the $150 third place prize. Entrants had to create a mobile application that allows users to buy digital tickets to ride Bloomington Transit buses. The entries were judged by their app's design, ease of use, compatibility with the city's existing IT infrastructure, and security of the app-generated tickets. The contest was part of this year's Combined Technology and Entrepreneurship Conference held on April 7th. The city will work with Bloomington Transit to test the winning app in the field. Data from the field, along with public input, will guide Bloomington Transit's efforts to make public transportation more accessible. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Barbara Fuqua.
And I'm Scott Weddle. Support for WFHB and the Daily Local News comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service, now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at smithvillesecurity.com.
Last week, Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton announced that he would ask the city to effectively give a 0.6-acre piece of land to a local nonprofit that would build a housing complex there. Rents at the one- and two-bedroom apartments would range from $550 to $850. WFHB News Director Joe Crawford spoke with Deborah Meyerson, the director of the organization seeking to build the housing. They discussed whether those rents are truly affordable and why it costs so much to build housing in Bloomington. We bring you their conversation now for today's WFHB Community Report.
Reporting for WFHB, I'm Joe Crawford. I am joined in the studio today by Deborah Meyerson, the Executive Director of South Central Indiana Housing Opportunities. Deborah, thank you for talking with us today.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
So South Central Indiana Housing Opportunities is an organization that has just announced that it's hoping to build a new housing complex on South Rogers Street near the planned Switchyard Park, calling it the Switchyard Apartments. And this is news, particularly because the city government may be helping out. The city actually owns the property on South Rogers, and there are plans to effectively give the land to South Central Indiana Housing Opportunities. The project is being billed as an affordable housing project. Just last night, the Bloomington Board of Parks Commissioners, which legally owns the land, showed favor for the project. They officially set the process in motion. Deborah, tell us first, what is South Central Indiana Housing Opportunities, and how did this particular project come to be?
Sure. South Central Indiana Housing Opportunities, we often call it SIHO, just because it's kind of a mouthful otherwise. We are an independent nonprofit affiliate of the Bloomington Housing Authority. Essentially, there is a huge need for more affordable housing in the community, and the Housing Authority recognized that and saw a nonprofit as an important way to develop more units. And so our mission is to provide housing for low and moderate income households in Bloomington, Monroe County, and actually a broader area. We cover surrounding counties as well, because we recognize that people live beyond just Bloomington and Monroe County, and housing needs extend past those lines as well.
And so how did you come to be involved with this project to build 16 units in the 1900 block of South Rogers Street?
Knowing the Mayor Hamilton's strong support for the needs of housing in the community, we approached him and wanted to talk about possibilities for land donation or some kind of land that we could build on that would help lower the overall cost of development. And knowing that Switchyard Park was a new recent acquisition from the city, wondering if in that 65 acres there might be some portion of that that could be allocated for affordable housing development, even if that wasn't the original purpose for which it was acquired. Ultimately, he came forward to propose the lot that we are prepared to build on. This will be 16 units built in two phases of 8 units each. They basically will each have a mix of 1 and 2 bedroom apartments. The rents for the 1 bedrooms will be between $550 and $650. The rents for the 2 bedrooms will be between $655 and $850.
So I want to ask you about the affordability of these units. Your organization actually produced a report earlier this year in which you found that the average wage of a Bloomington renter is $8.25 per hour. At that wage, it would take 67 hours of work to afford just the rent at the cheapest one-bedroom place in this project without utilities, 79 hours for one of the more expensive one-bedroom apartments. So are these truly affordable units?
They are, in terms of the income that they're targeted at. Again, somebody earning the 50% of the area median income, the median income for Monroe County, some of the statistics are based on Bloomington, Sarah Monroe, is $67,000 a year. And so 50% of that would be half of that, and then 30% of that, I don't have the math in front of me, but you can kind of do that in terms of divide it by 12, then divide that by 30, and that's the monthly allowance for a household income.
Is there any disconnect between those figures and the figures that were presented in your report earlier this year?
There's a lot of different ways to look at housing. So for example, one of the things we found in the report was that when you look at extremely low income, which is 30% of area median income or less, there's only 14 housing units for every 100 people that need it. And so there's certainly additional housing needs that this one housing project of 16 units is not going to be able to address. But that's our mission as an organization, to go beyond that. New construction is important. We're currently looking at opportunities for preservation of existing units, because that's much less expensive to preserve existing units. And looking at a broad-based strategy with multiple prongs to look at how to solve affordable housing needs.
So would it be accurate, are you saying that the strategies to try to accommodate what you might call an average Bloomington renter, someone who does make just a little bit above minimum wage, that a strategy to accommodate those people or to help provide them housing might not involve the new construction that is involved in this project?
We can't do it all with new construction. There's, again, expensive land, limited resources of land. There's two ways to reduce the cost of housing. You can lower the cost of the actual housing, or you can increase wages. There's going to need to be pressures in both directions. We're working on housing costs. We're not in a position to raise people's wages.
And can you talk about how you set the rents and what are the factors that cause housing to be, you know, not cheap in Bloomington?
Sure. Well, certainly that land cost is an important part of it. Our just total development cost is $1.2 million for just for the first phase. So that's the first 8 units. And the way that adds up is it's just looking at what the income is and then looking at what the cost to develop it is. We look at what our operating income is and then what kind of a loan we can get based on that operating income. And that is far short of the total 1.2. So we have to do what's called layering subsidies. We have to take the bank loan we can get. Then we look at other sources of funding. So implicitly, the city's donation of the land or long-term lease of the land is part of that, but that's not part of the budget. Then there's also money from the city that they are looking at, which is home dollars, which is a federal source of funding, but it's allocated by the city. We're looking at a source of funding from the Federal Home Loan Bank, which has an affordable housing program. And then we still have what's called a gap. There's the gap between the income from the rents and what it costs to build and figuring out how to fill that in.
And lastly, this project serves a certain population or a certain income group. There are clearly a lot of people who live in Bloomington below that income group. Are there strategies you think that will work, that can work, for serving that population who are right now either not able to afford housing at all or paying far more than they should be for housing?
Sure. And cost burden is a term for people who are paying more than 30% of their income in housing. And there's extremely cost burden, which is people who are paying over 50% of their income in housing. And that's a significant part of the population in Bloomington as well. And so that's an important question because there's a wide range of affordability needs, because talking about affordable housing can refer to a wide range of incomes. And so certainly looking for deeper levels of subsidy for folks with lower incomes, and that's important, and it's not easy to do. We are fortunate in Bloomington that we have a wide range of social service organizations that can help provide support, if not always housing. So working in collaboration is certainly going to be an important way to try and reach those households with greater needs. Because honestly, as you go lower to lower incomes, people often have needs that are more than just housing. They may have needs for employment. They may have addiction issues. There may be just a variety of needs that are not fully addressed by just housing alone. And so starting with housing, but also looking at multiplying the services available to provide to address multiple needs.
I've been speaking with Deborah Meyerson, the Executive Director of South Central Indiana Housing Opportunities. Deborah, thanks for talking with us.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Up next, our weekly consumer watchdog segment, Better Beware.
Welcome to Better Beware. Here's your consumer watchdog from WFHB Community Radio with the latest information and helpful hints designed to keep your head out of the clouds, your feet on the ground, and your money in your pocket.
Well, the internet just got more dangerous than ever. Scammers and fraudsters now have military-grade computer attack software to work with. Last month, a hacker group calling themselves the Shadow Brokers wormed their way into the U.S. National Security Agency and leaked super-secret files onto the web. Seems the NSA had been finding security holes in programs like the Windows operating system, but not telling anyone, just using them to develop weapons. One result was the worldwide WannaCry or WannaCrypto ransomware attack, which locked up thousands of computers and all but shut down Great Britain's National Health Service hospitals. That attack has been blunted with patches from Microsoft. You did get the latest updates, didn't you? And French researchers have released a program to unlock your files if you apply it before the WannaCry deadline and before you reboot your computer. But there's another attack going on right now that's even more widespread. Adlkuz, A-D-Y-L-K-U-Z-Z, is a virus that takes over your computer, but you might not even notice. It links computers into a botnet that grinds away at mining a digital currency called Monero for the bad guys. Monero is like Bitcoin, but it's even more popular among cyber criminals because it's secure, private, and untraceable, and the creators of Monero have made it crystal clear that they have no interest in finding out what people do with their currency. Adlkuz steals processing power anytime a computer is online, and all you might notice is that your system seems to be running slow. To attack your computer, the crooks first have to trick you into downloading their malware program. They do this largely through fake emails, which have a link to click or an attachment to open, but they've infected all kinds of links out there on the net, pop-up windows and such as well. Protecting your computer and all your files is up to you. Never, ever click on something in an email unless you're 100% sure it came from someone you know. You'd better be using strong passwords, different ones for each account, and you'd better have a good antivirus program installed on every net-connected device you have. Yes, including your smartphone. Keep all your software updated all the time. Attacks are getting nastier, but programmers are getting faster at putting out patches. Beyond that, beware and be very wary if you're using public Wi-Fi connections in a hotel, bus station, coffee shop, or wherever. It's best to disable file sharing, auto-connect features, and open networking. If you have a Wi-Fi router at home, change its password to something very strong and set up a separate guest network for visitors to use. The internet is a war zone. Don't poke your virtual head out into it without putting on your digital helmet, flak jacket, and armored boots. I'm Richard Fish for WFHB News and Public Affairs.
Better Beware comes to you from WFHB Bloomington, Indiana. Find all our episodes at WFHB.org. If you can help put the kibosh on a con, email beware@WFHB.org. Remember, swindlers never give a sucker an even break.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Sarah Vaughn and Cole Stinson, along with Joe Crawford for Cats Week, in partnership with Community Access Television Services. Better Beware was produced by Richard Fish. Our feature was produced by Joe Crawford.
Our engineer today, Dan Withard. Theme music provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Joe Crawford. For WFHB, this is Scott Weddle.
And I'm Barbara Fuqua. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported independent daily news program. Recognized among the best newscasts in 2016 by the Indiana chapter of the Society of Professional Journalists.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. Send inquiries to news@wfhb.org. And stay tuned for Standing Room Only, our award-winning weekly lecture series coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.